This is not an ad, so please do not skip. In this episode, we deal with some pretty heavy subject matter, including the loss of life. Please consider if you should continue listening.
A lot of people focus on his end of watch date, which is March 31st. I choose to celebrate his life and not his death.
Welcome to the American Grown Podcast, hosted by Austin Sullivan. The American Grown Podcast will focus on people from different walks of life and their journey to where they are now. Now, turn up your volume and settle in for a great episode.
This is the American Grown Podcast, recorded inside the ColorTech Creative Solutions Studios. In this episode, we have Laura Lebo, Executive Coach and Executive Director of the William D. Lebo Memorial Foundation. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
It is great to see you again. It's been quite some time.
It has. It's been at least a decade since I saw you.
Oh, don't
you
say that.
Yeah.
So for the listeners, at HAC, you were a professor, an adjunct professor. And I was going there for business.
Mm-hmm.
This goes back to, about 2013, maybe 2014.
Mm-hmm. Intro to business, principles of management, and human resource management.
You have better memory than I
do. Yeah, those are the three things I taught.
Yep. I'll tell you what, I always enjoyed your class because it was, you brought an outside perspective. Where I feel like some teachers, professors are, they've been in schooling their whole life, but you've actually have real life experience, mm-hmm. And I thought we got along very well. And I do feel like I've learned a lot from you.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. It was always a pleasure. Like walking to your class was not like, oh, humdrum, here we go. I was never bored. I always looked forward to it. And it's crazy to think that, about a decade. Wow.
I do remember specifically telling you over and over again that you needed to quit. Because you worked for your family business, go out, get another job, work for somebody who's not related to you, and then come back.
You're right. I do remember that.
And you didn't.
I didn't.
But it's okay because it worked out.
It worked out.
I've been watching.
Oh, thank you. I was going to say, I think it worked out, right? I'm doing pretty well. The one thing I will remember, I do remember you telling me that, but I'll always remember this. I remember you said to me that it's the third generation where a business will normally, a third generation will make or break a business, either a family business. Either they'll succeed or they will fail because the first generation, they're the founders. They work the hardest to grow. The second generation then builds upon that. And the third generation can either kick back and rely on what's been done by the previous two, or they can excel it and grow it. So I think that's along the lines of what you said. Do you remember?
Yes.
Do you?
Okay. I do specifically remember that.
Yeah.
And you can either spend it or build it.
I always remember
and
that.
And clearly you are building it.
Well, thank
so I'm
you.
Very proud of you.
Sometimes I don't think I give myself enough credit. I don't know. I think as humans, as people, sometimes we don't step back and just look at what we've done or what we're doing, and we don't maybe always live in the moment. It's kind of like, I am doing it. You know what I mean? And we are doing it, and it's like, it's growing. We're getting new, we're having new employees come on board. We're investing in new equipment. Yeah, I'm opening the doors of new clientele. So things are going very well, knock on wood here at ColorTech. But I will always remember that the third generation, make or break a business. And again, you said it more eloquently than that. But Laura, I will always remember that. There's certain things that even I had a client the one time I was in Reading, just a side note, for printing. We do printing for the listeners that might be new. And it was a new client, first time I walked in, and I had showed some samples to her. And she said, Austin, this piece speaks to me. Now, my grandfather, who's 86, was out in the car, and I said, Grandpa, what do you think of this? The client said, the piece speaks to her. She liked it that much, He said, in all my years of sales, I've never had a client say, this piece speaks to me. So there's certain phrases and things I will always remember.
Hmm.
Yeah, so you're on the list. You're probably top three easily.
Oh, look at that.
I know.
Special. I feel special.
Yes. So, and just real quick to clarify for any listeners that might be local here to Lebanon County and surrounding areas, this is Laura Lebo, not Laura Lebo. She's a radio host on Froggy 100.1, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Just to clarify.
Now, I'm friendly with Laura LeBeau.
Okay, good. Okay.
Because then we were actually born 1 week apart, so we're the same age.
Okay.
We lived in the same places at the same times. We both landed here in Lebanon County eventually. And we met here. We never knew each other anyplace else. So just weird crossings.
Isn't it crazy how that works out?
Yeah.
The other thing I want to ask while I have you here, on your like LinkedIn page and your email, you have a bunch of like letters behind your name. What do some of those mean?
I am some people will very kindly say, a lifelong learner. I say I'm an information junkie.
Okay.
And I am addicted to certifications. So if you go down my list, I have my Master of Human Resource Management, which is MHRM. I have my PCC, which is Professional Certified Coach through the International Coach Federation, which is the global organization that sets the standards for coaching. I am an SPHR, which is a Senior Professional of Human Resources, and I've held that for about 25 years. I am a Senior HR Professional, that's the SHRM SCP. I am a Certified Paralegal. I am a bunch of other things.
Yeah, you covered them all. I had to type them up. Yeah.
Blanchard Certified Coach, because I work for the Ken Blanchard Companies.
Okay.
And some other things in there.
So you have like, you've collected almost every certification out there.
Well, not yet.
But a lot of them.
Working on it.
Yeah, which is awesome. And I saw it. I'm like, okay, I figured the first one was something with like human resource management. Mm-hmm. But then the rest, I'm like, oh, I got to ask her. Let's jump in. Give us a little bit of background. Where were you born and raised?
So I was born in Orange, New Jersey, raised in Metuchen, New Jersey, and Woodbridge Township. So little near New York City. Okay. If you take the train into New York City, you would jump in on Metro Park. I lived right near Metro Park. And my dad was executive at Johnson & Johnson. He was on the team that created the Band-Aid.
No way.
He was the guy who was responsible for the chemical composition of the paper and the adhesive that went on. Like he was mainly responsible for the paper, but he was on the team for the adhesive as well, and worked on that. And he would, well, before I came along, because I have three sisters, they are 12, 11, and 10 years older than I am. And then I came along, oops.
No, come on now. Save the best for last.
Trust me, yeah. It was an oops. And he would come home with different test Band-Aids and slap them on my sisters and see who broke out.
Little R&D. Yes, you broke out. Oh, geez.
Yeah. So my sister Anne was the one who always broke out into a rash.
Okay, was she the oldest?
And she's the middle one.
She's the middle. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Number two. And she still does. Like, oh, she still does? If you put anything on her, she'll just break out in a rash. I'm sorry. I'm telling your secrets, Anne. But you know, it was interesting, and he was just a sciencey guy, and he was very, what did you learn today?
Okay.
And he wanted to hear what
details.
We learned today. Yeah. And he would ask questions, and it was good and inspired my love of learning. But it was also, oh, I have to come up with an answer. So there was some anxiety there.
Yeah.
And I think all four of us experienced that answer anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So don't like to be put on the spot with the, what is the answer? I'm not good at game shows.
Yeah, I got it. I won't call you if I end up on a game show and need a backup or a phone, you know, phone in. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, just regular. My parents did get divorced when I was 10, and they remarried different people. did not get along with my stepfather at all. He was not a pleasant man at all. I did get along with my stepmother reasonably, and she was a huge influence on my life. She said, if you're not learning, you're stagnating. So go learn something.
Whoa.
She was very encouraging. I was in the chorus and I was the lead in the senior play. And she actually was encouraging me to pursue the arts as opposed to business or science. And I don't know why I didn't, but I didn't. So,
do you remember what your mom, what she do?
Oh, my mom was a secretary for Johnson & Johnson.
Is that how they met?
No.
Johnson.
Oh, okay. No, okay. They actually met. My dad was a friend of my Uncle Ted. And, you know, he was one of the boys that was hanging around the house. And, you know, my mom wound up marrying him. They got married in 1950.
Okay.
Yeah. 1950.
Wow.
And then my dad was in the Navy, came home, well, went to college, went in the Navy, went back to college, finished up. Yeah.
What were you planning to do after high school?
Oh, boy. I remember when I was 12, I wanted to be a landscape architect.
A landscape architect?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know if I can see you doing that, Laura. I'll be honest, you know.
I know.
A landscape architect.
Yeah.
That's not your...
Dirty.
Yeah, that's not you.
Yeah,
and not talking to people. You know, you're such a people person, I feel. Yeah. Okay, so...
And then I wanted to be a psychologist. And my dad said, well, look, I'm only paying for 4 years of college. So anything past that is on you. But you are going to college and you are getting out of the house at 18. So buckle up.
Yeah.
It's happening. And I never thought that I had an option to do any. It wasn't even an option. I never realized that other things existed besides getting good grades, going to college. I didn't realize I could take a gap year. I didn't realize I could go to Europe and, you know, hop trains. I didn't realize any of those options because I was on such a standardized path.
Mm-hmm. Do you credit that to your father being so involved in your day to day and your schooling? What do you say?
No, he wasn't involved.
Okay.
He was just do it. This is what you do. You go to school, you get good grades, figure it out. And I figured it out. I self-studied, I self-managed, and just did what I thought I was supposed to do.
Wow. What college?
I went to Stockton State College.
Stockton State College.
It's okay. Actually, now it's Stockton University. It's in southern New Jersey, right outside Atlantic City. And I went there because it was the furthest state school away from where my family lived that I didn't have to live with other family members to go.
Okay.
So I picked it based on geography and independence. I wanted to be out.
You wanted that independence.
And on my own.
Yeah.
And I did it. And so when I got to college, Atlantic City was new, relatively new, not brand new. And they were required by New Jersey state law to have programs. What do they call them? Community support programs.
Okay. Like a community outreach kind
of
thing?
Yes. So maybe? In order to keep, they had to have 500 hotel rooms. And they had to have the programs. So they, Bally's and Sands, reached out to Stockton and Glassboro State Colleges. They would recruit us as dealers, change people.
Oh, to work
and they would train us. They would pay for our training.
Yeah.
And get us licensed and then give us jobs so that we could pay for college. So I became a blackjack dealer at Bally's Park Place.
Okay.
And that's how
was
how
that?
I,
how was that experience?
It was,
because imagine you see some things being a blackjack
you
dealer.
You see some things.
Yeah, yeah. Meet some characters too. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
I mean, I remember being on the floor of the casino the night that the Mets won the World Series.
Okay.
I think it was 86. And it was just, it was an experience.
Yeah, pandemonium.
Being there. It was interesting. It wasn't great. It's a boring job.
Okay.
Basically, you're counting to 21 over and over and over again.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
It's only exciting if you start talking to people and you make it fun for yourself. I knew it wasn't my career. It was just too dull.
Way to get by. Right.
Yeah. But it paid for my apartment. It paid for college. I was thrilled. What happened was, because I was working at the casino, I had to live down there. And in order to live down there, I had to take classes. And in order to pay for the classes, I had to work. So it turned into this circular thing.
Yeah.
Where I had to take classes all summer to keep my housing, to yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And before you knew it, I graduated in 3 years instead of 4.
Whoa. That's an achievement.
Well,
I mean,
it was a necessity. It wasn't intentional, but it happened.
But some people take, some people could be 5-6 years, you know, even though it's supposed
mm-hmm.
to be 4.
Right.
So I'm just saying good on you, because I feel like some people would not, you know, they would either drop out or, you know what I mean? They stay longer, but it sounds like your mind is always set and you worked hard to get the things you have and what you do. You know what I mean? You're not finding the easy way out.
Very, very goal oriented.
That's what I'm looking for. Yes.
What do you want? How are you going to get it? And then getting there.
How do you end up here in Lebanon?
Because
you're in Jersey.
Yes.
Why would you come to Lebanon? I mean, don't get me wrong. I love Lebanon County for the listeners. And a lot of people do, I think, sometimes talk negatively on mm-hmm. Lebanon. But there is so much to do here. And there's so many neat people with unique backgrounds and unique stories. Part of the reason why I started the podcast. But you know, how did you end up here?
So I met my husband in, it was a dark and stormy night. In I think it was 1985.
Okay.
I was 19 and I was visiting my friend from 7th grade who had started dating my husband's brother.
Okay. Richard.
So Denise and Richard were dating. I went to visit her. There was a poker game going on and Richard's brother, William, was at the table. We met. I thought he was cute, but I'm 19.
Yeah.
He's 27.
Okay.
Because we're 8 years, he was 8 years older than me.
A little bit older.
Yeah, a little bit older. Yeah. But see, now it's okay. Back then it was creepy because I was 19.
Because you're 19.
And he was this 27-year-old cop.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. So... Yeah. So life went on and, they got married. Denise and Richard got married in 88 and we were both at the wedding and
he was there
with his future wife.
Oh.
Because he got married to Dodie and they were married for about 10 years, had a daughter, Corinne. And a lot of people don't remember. He was actually hit by a car it was 4th of July weekend, 2002. And the guy was trying to commit suicide by cop and hit him, broke both his legs, and went for William's gun. William stood up with broken legs, held the guy off until backup came. And then they took him to the hospital. He had to have rods in his legs and things. Very shortly after that happened, Doris said, "I'm out," and asked for a divorce, and she moved out. Also, right around that time, I had started dating somebody.
Okay.
And he asked my friend Denise for my phone number, and she said she's dating somebody, so it didn't work out.
Forget about it.
He went, he enjoyed his midlife thing and got a hot tub and the Corvette and, nice, you know, yeah. had a good 5 years.
Enjoyed himself, yeah.
And he waited and waited.
He's patient.
patiently. And kept asking, has Laura jumped the guy yet? And finally, I did. And we went out on our first date. Like, he called me immediately and said, let's go out to dinner. On our first date, he asked me to marry him. He gave me
first date. So he was patiently waiting. He knew in the back of his mind.
He knew. And he said, I know I need to nail you down before somebody else sneaks in on me. And he brought me a gold necklace with little diamonds across it. It was a heart. And I actually wore it at the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those, people say, you'll know, you'll just know. And when you don't know, you have no, what are you talking about? You're stupid. This yeah. is, what do you mean you know?
Right.
Well, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's this feeling of, oh, I have found my person.
This is
I
the
have
one.
Found the other half of me, and this is it. And we were inseparable from that point on. Now, mind you, I was living in New Jersey.
Okay, so you're still not here in Lebanon County,
no,
in
I'm
beautiful
still,
Lebanon
I
County.
I am not here in Lebanon County. Yet.
Okay.
I am not.
Okay. So you're in New Jersey.
We started house hunting, and we were looking all over Lebanon County because we looked at taxes and coming to Lebanon because taxes in New Jersey are crazy.
And real quick, did William, did he have family here?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Maybe I missed that part. Okay.
He was born and raised here.
Okay.
He, no, I'm lying. He was born in Vicenza, Italy.
What?
Yeah.
I did not. Okay. In Italy.
In Italy.
How do you say that?
So his
Vicenza.
Vicenza.
Vicenza. Okay. Okay.
So his mother, who is a novel, an epic novel in and of herself, she was born in Istria, which then was Italy. And then World War II happened. She fled Tito's army to go to Trieste. And then in the 50s, when Bill's dad was in the army, they met. And Bill was born while he was still stationed in Vicenza. So he came here to Lebanon County when he was 15 months old.
Oh, my word.
And has been, you know.
Yeah.
And stayed.
Right, ever since. Yes, yes.
So, wow. So, yeah.
What a, like, small world and just, isn't it wild how things work out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, let's take a sip break. Let's take a sip break.
Yeah.
Yeah. If we could have a moment of silence for Lieutenant William D. Lebo and all those who have made the ultimate sacrifice in the line of duty. Thank you. Where were we?
Oh, yeah, we started house hunting.
House hunting. Yes. Yes.
We
so you're house
started
hunting.
House hunting. Yeah. I'm in New Jersey. He's here.
Thank you. Perfect.
We're house hunting. We met our realtor, Rennell, who showed us houses for about 18 months. And literally, we planned the wedding, got married, came home from the honeymoon, and still had not found a house.
Okay. So where were you staying? An apartment here in Lebanon?
Well,
or still...
he was living there. I was in New Jersey because I hadn't sold my house yet.
Okay. Okay.
And then the Dunkelberger house came on the market. I showed it to him, and he's like, that's it. That's the house. And we went and we saw it, and that was the house. So here we are in Lebanon, and we moved in September 4th of 2009.
Okay. Again, just small world.
Yeah.
You know, it's
six
crazy.
Months after we got married, by the way.
6 months. Wow. You're moving. You like to move quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So 6 months living together. Yeah, what was it like?
It was,
what was it like?
You know, the first year was hard because I was not accustomed to the rotating shifts.
Okay.
Back then, he was a lieutenant of a platoon that rotated backwards. They would do 2 weeks on day, then 2 weeks on midnight, then 2 weeks on second shift, and they would rotate. I think I got that right.
Okay.
But it was constantly changing. It was, you know, working family events around the schedules, and something that I had never been accustomed to because I lived the corporate life. Nine to five, weekends off, holidays, and flag day. And it was just odd for me. We were very lucky because there was a shift in the department, and he became the lieutenant. He got a promotion to lieutenant of all three platoons. So he was in charge of the patrol, and he was full-time day shift. So,
oh, nice. Yay. That's terrific. Yes. Oh my gosh.
It was fantastic.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. No, that's.
And that was in 2011. Okay. We were like a year and a half with rotating shifts.
2011. That's the year I graduated high school. Shout out to Cedar Crest. If there are any alum listening. So a platoon, how many? So he oversaw three platoons. Is that 10 people he oversaw? Four? Or how, do you remember how that worked? Or
I don't know.
Okay.
And I will honestly say I had no grasp of being married to a cop. He didn't bring his work home. He didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
He didn't have anyone over to visit except for like 2 o'clock in the morning when I was asleep. Like after work, he would have the guys over for a couple of beers on the back porch. Yeah. But he intentionally kept me very separate from that life. He wanted, somebody said he wanted to keep me innocent of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he enjoyed diving into my life, and, you know, every time I had to travel, he would go with me. He's like, I'll take vacation. I'll go with you. You know, 1 year I was doing something in Miami and had to go down there 3 times. He came with me every time.
Oh, my Lord. Wow.
So yeah.
He made it work. He enjoyed it. Yes,
he absolutely
enjoyed it. And he kept work it out of the house and kept it, which is tough to do, I believe. I would imagine.
Well, when we moved into the city, he walked to work every day or pogo sticked or took a jazzy or some other form of transportation, and he shook it off. He cleared his head going to work, and he cleared his head coming home, and that was his way of compartmentalizing, I believe. And then when he came home, it was all about me and the house and the dogs and what are we going to do and where are we going? What fun are we going to have?
Right. What kind of puppy dogs? Yeah.
Shiba Inus.
Shiba Inus. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I had Lily and Teddy before we started dating. And I'm pretty sure somebody said to him, you need to be nice to her dogs, because if you don't like her dogs, you have zero chance.
You're out. Yeah, yeah.
You're out.
Yeah.
So he loved my dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And when they died, I got Ginger Grace.
Ginger Grace.
Who is also a Shiba. And we call her Puppy.
Yeah.
And she is, I'm so happy that I had her. She was 2, just not quite 2 when he died. And she was my saving grace.
Yeah.
She was like, I have to feed the dog. I have to walk the dog. Yes.
Yeah. Kind of gave you some purpose or something to focus on.
Yeah.
I don't want to miss anything. So from 2011, like I said, I was graduating high school. I know I probably look older than I am, but what took place then from 2011 until, his passing in the line of duty, and we can go as in depth as you like.
Honestly, it was just regular life. When we moved into the house, we laid out plans, and Bill kept a to-do list, a short-term, medium-term, and long-term to-do list on his iPhone.
Oh, wow.
And we just worked through the list of how are we going to improve this house? How are we going to make it our house? Mm-hmm. And we just ticked off the to-do list and, you know, okay, put in a patio. And there was a point where we were remodeling the bathroom and I really wanted it to go faster than it was going. And every month I would buy a piece of the bathroom.
Okay.
And it would be delivered and show up and it would sit on the back porch. So in a few months, we had a toilet, we had the vanity, we had the shower, we had all the fixtures, and they're just sitting on the back porch. Like, dude, really?
Right. Yeah, let's go.
Can we pick up the pace a little bit? Mm-hmm. So finally.
Yeah, I love that. That's what my wife would do. Oh my gosh, yeah. Uh-huh.
So finally, I planned a party, and... Oh. Like, so he had a hard deadline
because
family is coming. We're going to have a house full of people.
Yeah.
And he pulled it off. He made it happen. And I have to say the bathroom is perfect.
There you go. Yeah. And you probably appreciated that he had those lists, being goal oriented and wanting to achieve things. So the house, you're fixing it up, making it your own normal kind of life. Do you want to talk about, you know, what happened on March 31st, 2022.
So that day he was, his schedule was changed because somebody was in training. They needed an officer in charge. And he said, fine, you know, I'll go in 4 to 12. So we had a normal day. I cooked a big dinner earlier in the day because he was not going to be home for dinner time. And it was the day of the funeral of the two troopers who were killed in Bucks County by the drunk driver, Siska and
I do recall that Mac. Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And I was watching the news and I said, as he went out the door, 3:30, I said, please be safe. And he said, nothing ever happens in Lebanon County. I'm fine. And so I was goofing around, you know, playing games on my iPad, finishing up my day at work. And, Chief Todd called my cell phone.
Okay.
And I looked at it and I thought, that's bizarre. And I'm not answering that phone. And, but that made me go, something's going on. And I looked at the Find My iPhone. And because he had... Because his first wife had cheated on him multiple times, I made sure he always knew where I was. And so we used the Find My iPhone and I started watching his dot and it wasn't moving and it wasn't moving and it wasn't moving. And then probably, I don't know what time it was, but the door knock. And it was, at that time it was Captain Fisher. Brett Fisher, who's now chief, and he told me, but I knew, like I
deep down, you knew something was up.
I knew he wasn't hurt. I knew he was dead, and I don't remember much else about that evening other than, you know, having them go get my mother-in-law and bring her to the house and letting her know and calling my sisters and having them come. And I remember thinking, oh my God, all these people are in his house. Mm-hmm. He would lose his mind.
Yes.
And I was running around trying to corral people into the fancy living room and trying to keep them from putting things on the countertops and cluttering up the place.
Right.
Like, I just remember, like, he would hate this.
What's going on? Yeah. He'd be like, no, don't
because
do that.
Because we were so, I mean, as much as I can talk, I am a severe introvert, and so is he.
Really?
Like, we very...
You hide it well.
Thank you.
Yeah, you do.
And, like, we need that downtime. We need that quiet so that we can do things like this. And that's why our house was so quiet. We had, you know, no slamming doors, no loud voices, no yelling.
Peaceful, very peaceful. Yes. I'm getting it. Yeah. Relaxing. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And house rules.
Yeah.
So that the next week was just a whirlwind because they called and said, well, you're going to, you know, we're going to go bring him home because they did the autopsy at Lehigh Valley Hospital. And no one told me what that entailed. So my sisters said, what kind of day is this? You know, do we need to dress up? And I'm like, it's just in the car day. Put on your sweatpants. Mm-hmm. And then I got to Lehigh and there was nobody in the parking lot. It was desolate. Just, we went inside. I went in, I talked to the coroner, and we came out and I kind of turned a corner and I looked out and saw the parking lot and I literally dropped to my knees because it was just a sea of first responders and people standing at attention and hundreds of vehicles. It just was, literally brought me to my knees. And then the ride home, every single bridge had people with the towers and the flags and signs.
Back the blue and I'm sure everything.
Literally,
yes.
That's from exit 60, 65, I think.
Wow.
Somewhere on Route 78.
Yeah, be about right. Yeah.
All the way. And I have to say, I still have a little meltdown when I'm driving on 78 because I have to drive it to get from here to my family. And it's very hard to drive past there and not remember.
We'll take a sip break. If we could have a moment of silence for Lieutenant William D. Lebo and all those who have made the ultimate sacrifice in the line of duty. Thank you. Lehigh, I mean, that's not close to Lebanon.
No.
Why?
It had to do with the coroner's office and the state police and how they, the certain protocols that they had to go through to do the investigation, because it was the perpetrator was killed, Bill was killed, Under Koffler was shot,
was injured,
Adams
right?
was shot. So there had to be certain protocols followed in order to follow the investigation and make sure that Officer McCarrick was not held responsible for anything, because he wasn't. He saved two lives that day.
Okay. I'm trying to recall. I remember hearing about it. Facebook, I think, as I saw it first, and I just couldn't believe, because if I'm correct, an officer hadn't lost their life in the line of duty here in Lebanon County for, I believe, over 100 years.
120 years.
120 years. So, if I remember, it was more or less a house call. And if you don't mind going more
depth. No, it was a... So, I will say up front, I do not know the perpetrator's name, and I don't know where it happened, and I do that purposely. I do not want to know. I don't want that information in my head. I do know that it was a domestic call. He had broken into a family residence and apparently was laying in wait for some family members to come home. Family came home, saw that this person was in the house, called the police, and emergency services was called in, and Bill heard the call because it was briefing. So he said, I know this guy. I've encountered him multiple times over the years.
Okay.
I can talk him off the ledge. I'll go. And plus, I'm training these guys because one of them was brand new to the force. And he went thinking he could talk this guy down.
Right, reason with him, yeah.
And that's how it happened. And it's just a series of points that what if that officer hadn't gone to training? What if Bill hadn't had to fill in OIC? What if he decided to ride his desk instead of going out on the street? There's no reason to it.
Yeah. I do feel like it's like your life's kind of planned out, you know, and you meet people along the way. You have journeys with them and experiences with them.
And you're supposed to learn things from them.
So as you're coming home, where is Bill's final resting place? He's at home.
He is at home. He is sitting in my living room next to his Bible and his glasses. Yes.
Yeah.
And I his mother had a plaque put next to his sister and his father in the cemetery, the family cemetery. I know in my heart he is not there. I know he is with me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the urn is just a nice touch point for me.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Like a reminder. But yeah, oh my gosh, he's definitely with you. I say it about grandparents, you know, my grandfather passed away, and it's like they're always watching over you. You know what I mean? I do believe that. And it's like a guardian angel.
Yes. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, I was making a decision about the
house.
We renovated the kitchen.
Okay. Yeah. I was like, you're going with the house, aren't you? Yep. Okay. Yeah.
And I was talking to the contractor and I said, look, here are the plans. We've had these plans for 10 years. This is what we want. And there was a piece, and for some reason, I felt him like standing behind me, like hugging my back.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you know, I'm really worried about the back roof because Bill used to paint it and, you know, service it every 2 years.
Okay. Okay. Yep.
But I'm not going to be able to do that. So we need to put a standing seam metal roof on the back. And to this day, I'm like, I don't even, like, up until that moment, I had no idea what a standing seam metal roof was.
So it's like, where'd that come from,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I know I said it even more specific than what I just said.
Wow.
But it was just like crazy, but it's exactly what needed to be done.
Yeah.
So he's still calling the shots.
He's called the shots. He's with you and watching over. So now the foundation, the William D. Lebo Memorial Foundation, how did that come about? How'd that start?
Well, the funeral was very intense. And a couple of days after that, some of his fellow officers came to me and said that they would like to create a foundation for his memory, in his memory. And I said, that sounds like a good idea. So we went, we did the incorporation, and it was literally 3 weeks after he had been killed. It happened very quickly. And I think it's appropriate that his legacy be remembered here in Lebanon County, and that the post office is going to be named as well after him. Well, it is. Legally, it's already the Lieutenant.
I didn't know that.
Surprise!
Whoa, is this a first? No, I didn't know this. Okay.
So back in January, Mueser, excuse me, Congressman Mueser, he introduced a bill on the House floor to name our post office.
Yeah.
The Lieutenant William D. Lebo Memorial Post Office. Oh, it's phenomenal. It passed unanimously on January 29th, and then it went to the Senate. It passed unanimously in, I believe, April, and then President Biden signed it into law right before Police Week, so somewhere around May 10th.
Okay.
So it is officially named the William D. Lebo Memorial Post Office. We're going to have the dedication ceremony on May 22nd, which is his birthday.
Okay.
A lot of people focus on his end of watch date, which is March 31st. I choose to celebrate his life and not his death.
Which is the right way, I think, to do it.
Yes.
And for anybody, I think. I think, you know, you want to remember the good times and those memories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good way to make sure his memory, and it's not just his memory, it's his manner of policing that needs to be remembered and needs to be put forward. You know, proactive, positive policing.
Yeah.
He would ask... He would tell his officers to get out of the car, walk around, talk to people, wear your hat so that people could identify that help was right there if they needed it, to get to know the community so that they weren't afraid of you, to embed yourself, know the stories. If you're in the squad car, to turn the radio down, open up the windows so that you can hear what's going on, so that you're embedded in the community, and really demonstrate that leadership on a day-to-day basis. And that's how we're going to get past this bump in the road with police.
Yes, yeah.
And the perception of police nationally.
It's a shame how... Yeah, they want to cut funding and not support the police, and there's such a movement, anti-movement against police officers. But who are the people you're going to call when you need someone the most? You know,
exactly. It's the first phone call you make when you're in trouble. Oh, yeah. You call 911, and you expect them to show up. Well, proactive, positive policing.
Yes, and being a part of the community, but they need those funds and those resources. You can't just say, you know, defund the police and take, mm-hmm. you know, take that funding away, because then they're not going to, they need funding to be better educated, to be more involved. And it just.
And while we do scholarships for any first responder or their children who want to continue their education, and that includes not only college, but VOTEC, but certifications, first aid and safety, whatever they want to continue. What we ask of them is they tell us how that they are going to bring it home to Lebanon.
I love that. Yes.
You know, we will support you in any way possible to go out and get that education. We just want you to bring it home.
Yeah.
And build Lebanon.
Yeah, I love that. And would that be the mission statement, or what is kind of the mission statement?
So you caught me. I'm not sure. I don't remember it off the top of my head, but it's growing Lebanon, growing our leaders, growing our future. And everything feeds into those three things. We provide leadership education for first responders so that our leadership is solid. We provide education to our first responders and to their children so that they can bring it home to Lebanon County and grow and make us stronger. There are certain projects that we would really love to do in that we'd like to do a bus stop for the widow's home on Oak Street so that they have at least a shelter and a walkway for safety purposes. There are some other projects we'd like to do in conjunction with Rails to Trails, just whatever we can do to make Lebanon stronger and a stronger community, making sure that our officers and our first responders have the tools they need to go out on the street and create those community bonds.
Yeah, and a safe environment, right?
Yes, for everyone. So that these people are safe. Mm-hmm. They are not here to hurt me. They are here to help me. And they are my friends.
I remember going back to, elementary school, we had a DARE program. And, you know, the police officer coming in had an impact, you know, because, again, it was a figure or person of authority. But yet, you were, like, I always respected police officers, any first responders, any soldiers and military. But I feel like a lot of times now the respect isn't given, and it's more of a, maybe a fear, but it's like they're human at the end of the day. Just because they have the badge or this and that, they're human just like us, and they have families, they care, they want to get home to their families. And the main thing is, like you said, it's making the community stronger together. The first responders are keeping, you know, the average Joe safe. Mm-hmm. In return, we show them respect. You know, that's just what you do. And sometimes I just wonder, as a community, as the world in general, and the country, it's like, Where do we lose that, you know? Where'd that go astray?
The pendulum swings. It'll swing back.
I like that.
I have faith that it will.
Is there someone you would say is a mentor in your life?
I've had so many people who come along and give me a nudge in the right direction, who just call me out on my shit.
Yeah.
And say, what are you doing? You can't do this. You can't behave like this. Pull yourself together. Mm-hmm. And it sets me back on my path. And I am still not sure what I want to be when I grow up.
Yeah.
But I'm figuring it out step by step.
That's one of the questions I have in the form. We got together very quickly to record this. You didn't have time to fill it out, but that's one of the questions I have. What do you want to be when you grow up? So it's funny you mentioned that, you know.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm thinking, I've tapped Adam Grant, who is a professor at Wharton Positive Psychology, and also Martin Seligman. I've asked them if they're willing to have lunch with me and, you know, talk about what I want to be when I grow up. So maybe a doctorate, who knows? But I love that. I don't know.
Don't know. People wanted to volunteer. They have time. They want to donate. How can they support the William D. Lebo Memorial Foundation?
You can go to the website, which is ltwdlebo.org.
And I'll put a link in the show notes for all the listeners.
That's fantastic. Keep it simple. Yeah. So,
they can just go there.
You can go to the website. There is a donate link.
Like I said, you can go support, donate. But like, if people, are you looking for volunteers for your events?
If you want to volunteer, absolutely. We have a strong board. We have committees, and we're happy to have anyone who'd like to participate, volunteer. Absolutely.
Now, you have a gala coming up this year?
Absolutely. It's going to be a fun time. And the gala originated because Bill and I always did the baloney drop at New Year's Eve. And we always, New Year's Eve was our thing. Our, you know, my family would come up and we would watch movies and go do the baloney drop and go out to dinner. And he a lot of people don't know, he liked fancy. He liked to dress up.
Yeah.
He liked a good party. He liked to get silly. And this evening is what that's about.
Okay.
So we're going to dress up. We're going to be fancy. We have gaming tables with funny money. We'll have baskets to bid on. We'll have a couple of live auction items. Leitzel's Jewelry has graciously provided a thin blue line necklace, and that will be raffled off. All proceeds go to our scholarships and our projects. 100%, we do not pull a salary. We do not...
Well, phenomenal. Yeah. Yeah.
100% goes 100%. To
wow.
our projects. And it is a speakeasy theme, so you can either dress up in 1920s gangster gear.
Okay.
Or you can dress in fancy attire as you like. We're going to have signature drinks. We're going to have the martini, of course, because that was big in the roaring 20s.
20s, yeah.
And old fashions. And there's a secret word to get in, which you'll get when you get the ticket.
Well, I got to know now. The secret word. Okay. All right.
And DJ Payne will be our DJ. Dance floor.
Perfect.
And it is at the Antique Automobile Museum, where there's a display this month of first responder vehicles, and the vehicles will be there through the event. So that's going to be a fun time. We have a big police motorcycle display. It's just a fantastic time. And we have run of the entire building.
The whole building?
The whole building.
Oh, that's a big building. That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So you can walk through and see all of the displays. I believe the Tucker display is still there too.
Okay. And this is November 2nd?
November 2nd. November 2nd? From 5 to 11.
5 to 11. Okay. And they can purchase tickets and everything online?
Online. Just click the donate button on the website, and that'll take you straight to the tickets.
Perfect. That sounds awesome. Now, will you be working a table or no?
Oh, I will be pit bossing.
Will you? I'll be pit bossing. I like that. Okay.
Because I know the games. And yes, I will be pit bossing.
What would you say is a life lesson that you've learned that could help others?
Oh, life is short. Do it now. I went to Italy to visit Bill's family with his mother in 21. And we went over and spent 3 weeks. And he said, I need to put the windows in. I'll go next time. Life is short. And I'm not postponing anything. And the other thing is, if you're not learning, you're stagnating. So go learn something.
Yes. I love that. Because I think you get caught up in your life, you know, day-to-day job and the things you do. And you know, I think you're always learning. But yet, to further your education, to go in depth. And you know what? You like you said, you only get one go around, you know. So live it up. And if there's something you want to do, people you want to see, I'm getting...
Get curious.
Get curious, right. And tell the people, because you know, that you love them. You know what I mean? Whether it's your best friend, your wife, your kids, because you never know. I think that's so important. I think from a male's perspective, sometimes we don't say that, you know, because we're trying to be macho and the big guys. But it's like, I, you know, tell my sisters on my mom's side and my brother, my dad, you know, it's like, yeah, I love yous, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's important.
Yeah, for sure. My goodness. I wanted to talk about the items you brought with, because you have quite a collection.
I do.
Yes, everything's very colorful in the signs and everything.
I want to start with my wedding rings.
Okay.
A lot of people notice them, but they're afraid to ask. I will say... After everything happened, I wore my rings, my engagement ring, my wedding ring, and then I wore his ring on this finger. And after about 6 months, I felt like it needed to shake up a little bit. Mm-hmm. It needed to be more significant and meaningful. And also, I will say, I had never taken off my wedding ring. When we were getting engaged, I said to him, call the jeweler, here's their phone number. You need to think of something to inscribe inside my ring. And if I ever feel the need to take my ring off, it better be good enough to make me put it back on.
Whoa.
And he did. The only time it came off my finger was when I had surgery, and he took the rings off, put them on his pinky, and then in the recovery room, he took them off his pinky and put them right back on my finger. And then the only time. So 6 months after, I went and I talked to Allison at Leitzel's Jewelers, and I explained the story, and I said, I haven't taken them off yet, but this, like, we need to talk about what to do with them. And sometime, like a couple weeks after that, I took them off and I read the inside, and it said, for I'd found love and love was you. And I'm thinking, well, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
And of course, the first thing I do is Google it. Okay. Because I'm thinking, well, what poem is this from? Okay. Where did it come from? What? No idea. It wasn't coming up in any Google search. It was making me crazy. So I was sitting in my office one day, and I'm looking at all the boards and the things that I have stuck on the boards. And I went, oh my God. He wrote me a Roses Are Red poem, because he did that, like either a limerick or a Roses Are Red poem. And roses are red, violets are blue, for I'd found love and love was you.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
And it was from the heart. It was him. You know, it wasn't something you could Google or something you could come up, you know, it was his original work, you know? Yeah. Wow.
It just spoke everything to me. So what I did was I had mine flattened out a little bit, because we were both OCD crazy too. Like, both introverts, both OCD. And everything has to match. So I had them to match. And then I put the thin blue line, the sapphire eternity band in between for the thin blue line. It's significant, and
oh my goodness, yes.
It means everything to me. Yeah. And the inscriptions are still in place.
Wow. Now, did you have, you inscribed in his?
I did.
So what was yours?
I wrote, I promise forever. And I mean it. I will never be getting married again. I'm a once and done kind of girl. So that's my first thing.
Which is beautiful. That's all you really needed to bring, but yet there's more. Okay. And I want to say too, I don't know, but your necklace is beautiful as well. I want to compliment you on that as well.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
My compass trying to find my way.
That's what I figured. It was a cardinal compass. Yeah.
This.
I'm kind of a big deal.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a little sign. I'm kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
He used to tease me. And like the way I drive, very Jersey-like. And he said, I always look like I have a purpose. Like, nobody's going to mess with me because I look like I'm going somewhere. I look like I'm doing something. When I was driving and backing out of the driveway, go, I'm Laura Lebo, out my way. I'm coming back.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, so
kind of a big deal. I love it.
He recognized. Yeah.
Well, you do. You carry yourself professionally, and like you belong. Like you, I don't want to say own the place, but I don't know if you ever heard of this saying where it's like act like you've been there or act like you own the place, and people will appreciate it. Or you know, if you're in a like trying to get backstage on a concert or something, you know, you act like you own the place. I'm a big deal. I'm kind of a big deal. Yeah, I belong here. Exactly.
I'm kind of a big deal.
Yeah. So I love that. Oh my gosh. Yes. That's yeah.
So he that was his view of me.
He got it right. I love it. Yeah. But yeah, please, what else you have?
And then I have my little sign that after he died, somebody gave this to me. They whispered to her, "You cannot withstand the storm." And "I am the storm," she whispered back. And that's kind of another thing I have on my desk that spoke to me and says, "I can do this. It's going to be hard, but I can do this."
But you're strong, right? And that's the whole point of it. You are the storm. Yeah. And you can do anything.
Trying. And then, of course, my Shiba Inu.
Yeah. I love that. And again, played such a crucial role in getting through those early years, really.
And still does.
Still, yeah.
She goes everywhere with me. She's not going to Europe, but, you know.
Yeah, right. How can our listeners connect with you and follow along on your journey?
Oh, you can follow us on Facebook, the William D. Lebo Memorial Foundation. It's hashtag Lebo Memorial. And, or you can follow me. I'm on there with my full name, Laura Swindlehurst Lebo.
Before we close out, is there anything else you'd like the listeners to know?
That's a lot. That's probably...
Yeah. I think it brought a lot of light to, you know, what you're doing here in Lebanon County.
I want his memory embedded on every person in this county, and I want him to be remembered for the very good, kind man he was.
Mm-hmm. And his commitment to community, right? His legacy, like you said. I'm looking forward to, would you say, next year with the post office being renamed. That's phenomenal. So I'm going to close it out if it's all right with you.
Yes, absolutely.
Perfect. Laura Lebo, Executive Coach and Executive Director of the William D. Lebo Memorial Foundation, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. To see photos of today's guests and more content, just search American Grown Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to be a featured guest on the podcast, please direct message or email Austin at AmericanGrownPod@gmail.com.
This episode was brought to you by these sponsors.
Cleona Coffee Roasters is a small batch coffee roastery and coffee shop, veteran and first responder owned, community oriented, and roasted fresh to order. Now open inside 911 Rapid Response, Anvil, PA. Go to CleonaCoffeeRoasters.com to order online, see updated hours, and find where you can buy it close to you.
Triggered 22 LLC, a veteran-owned apparel company. By purchasing a t-shirt, hat, or hoodie from Triggered 22, you're not only supporting a small business, but you're bringing awareness to veteran PTSD and suicide. Please help save the lives of those who fought for our freedoms. Visit triggered22.com now and place your order. Let's help those suffering from invisible wounds.